WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into another Maryland Crab Cake Tour week. We're going to be at Fadley's. I got my Fadley's gear on. I always say it might be the last time in the old Lexington Market. My wife actually had a lunch there this weekend down at the old Lexington Market next to the new Lexington Market. We'll be there from Thursday morning, about 9 till about noon. I think it's going to be the last time at the old market. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll have some 50th anniversary scratch-offs to give away, as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. I'll have the floppy hat on. I wore the bucket hat last week, and we had a really, really good time, and I'm really looking forward to folks hearing our conversation at Spirits West. In lieu of football conversation this week, because Luke is not going out to Owings Mills. He's doing all things Orioles this week. I bring Luke Jones in. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him, Luke, at WNST.net. Oriole baseball all weekend. Dude, I went down to Southwest Baltimore. I was in Wilkins Avenue over at Spirits West. Everything in the joints, Orioles, Orioles, Orioles. Had a great conversation with Chad Wiesling. Chad, of course, is the agent for Josh Jacobs. I thought we were just going to talk a little bit of football. Next thing I know, he's wearing his Child's Play shirt. We're doing heavy metal Baltimore reunion. Union stories and seeing bands on hills and stuff like that. So make sure you check that out, because Luke has said to me he's boycotting all NFL talk for the next 4.5 weeks until he has to talk about it every minute of every day. Happy baseball season to you. It's not often you and I get together in late June and the Ravens are taking a nappy nap and the Orioles are beyond relevant, really. I don't want to say surging, but you know, every single day they make another case for why you're there, why we're here, and why we believe they're going to be playing baseball in October.
No question about it. And not so much surging, but you look at where they were around Memorial Day. Remember, they lose Cedric Mullins, and I mean, he had been their best player, and you're thinking, how are you going to replace this guy? How are you going to tread water? And well, they've been able to tread water, and they've done a nice job. And we've seen Aaron Hicks step up. We've seen Ryan O'Hearn step up in place of Ryan Mountcastle. And Austin Hayes has had an all-star caliber season. And you look at this team, and we talked about this after they went through their gauntlet of May, where they did so well. And you know, they've been in that neighborhood of being 15, 16, 17, 18 games above 500 for a while now. That's where they've been. And they, every time you feel a little concerned, you know, middle relief or bottom of the order in the middle infield not giving you much, or you lose a couple games,
or you get your ass kicked 13-1.
Right, exactly. and you're wondering, okay, is this going to be the start of a little bit of a slow period for them? And well, as was the case over the weekend, they bounce right back and they get a walk-off home run from Ryan McKenna on Saturday, our latest example of an unlikely hero. And then on Sunday, I mean, Kyle Bradish, excellent. Anthony Santander flashing leather, robbing a home run in the first inning, and then hitting another home run later in the game. And they got a big hit from Anthony Bemboom, you know, who couldn't have dropped the ball into right field.
Boom, baby.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, it's uncanny. And we've talked about it. They haven't had these real long winning streaks of late, per se. But every time they lose a game, maybe they lose two in a row, and you're thinking, okay, is this the start of a little bit of a lull? They come right back. And this weekend against Seattle was a perfect example of that, where they get embarrassed on Friday night. I mean, just an ugly, ugly performance. Kyle Gibson was bad. They did not help him out with a couple defensive plays. We saw some base running miscues over the course of the weekend. So it wasn't perfect baseball, but they were able to put Friday behind them very quickly, and then you win another series. I mean, what more can you ask for than that? You just keep winning series. You know, it doesn't have to be these long extended winning streaks, but they've avoided being swept to this point. You know, you have to go back to early last season for that to happen to them, you know, since Adley Rutschman arrived. And you know, they win series. They have minimized the, you know, losing a game here or there, losing two in a row maybe. They haven't, you know, they've only lost three in a row once all year. I mean, it's a formula that adds up to a team not just being pretty good, not just being in wild card contention. It's the kind of formula that adds up to being in great position as we're now rapidly approaching the month of July. And the Orioles are sitting there and with the second best record in the AL, and they've kind of been duking it out with Texas in that regard. And they're in great position for at least a wild card spot. And oh yeah, they're not giving up on chasing the Rays as they split a pair down at the Trop last week. So it's fun. And I mean, this is just a team that has shown a lot of resiliency, and you know, they've been able to just go out and win series, go out and bounce back from a tough game or two. And they just give you a lot of confidence that that's going to continue, even acknowledging that it's not a perfect team, and there's certainly some things that they can still get better with.
Stay on the field here about getting guys healthy and Mullins and what the big picture is with Hicks and the moves that Elias has made. Where is this thing going to pan out 10 days from now? Like, what does a rotation look like there? And cows are coming. Like, the one thing about the minors, and we'll do a whole thing on the minors and calling guys up, because they're going to be on this train where once a month they're going to call somebody up we've heard of, maybe even more often than that. And then there's the space of where do these guys go? And that was all of the offseason of what do they need Frazier for, and where Henderson's going to play, and if he can play, and how bodies are going to move. This time last year, it was all Trey Mancini, remember?
Right. Right, exactly. And waiting on, you know, Adley Rutschman arrived in May, and waiting on Gunnar Henderson. Although at this time last year, I'm not sure people necessarily expected Gunnar Henderson. He was that good at Triple A Norfolk.
I don't know if this time last year, if I would have told you they're going to be 20 games over 500, stay that way, and be an is team this year. If I would have guaranteed you an is this year from a might be last year, we all would have scratched our heads and say, well, that's a little aggressive to think that like 23 will be their year, probably more 24, 25, if you really were sort of looking at it. And certainly the offseason they had, which pissed you off that they didn't spend any money and didn't invest and go all in, didn't look like it was a fortification kind of year. Now that we're in it, you look back to a year ago and say, this has happened pretty quickly, but these guys have, nobody's gone backwards the way Mullins did years ago. I mean, you know, Henderson's had a moment or two where it's like, is he in over his head or whatever? Rutschman was never that way. But it feels like once these guys graduate in, we start saying, all right, where are they going to be in the lineup? How's this going to affect the lineup? What's the next 300, 400 at-bats look like for this player? Or in this case, maybe 250 or 300 at-bats during this season, to say, what's this team going to look like on October 1st? Because that's the question I keep asking myself, because I'm convinced they're a playoff team. I was convinced of that pretty early on. I'm convinced that even a Mullins in or out, or a bad start from Gibson or whatever, is not going to rock their boat. But I really am wondering, what's the team look like by the time the Ravens get playing? Because it's going to look different. And it's going to look different by three or four guys, maybe five guys. And I'm wondering what what that 20% of the roster looks like over the next 60 days.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating, because I think that's been one of the great questions for this team. And obviously, when you have an injury to a Cedric Mullins, I mean, what they've gotten from Aaron Hicks, I mean, more than anyone could have thought. He's played like the Aaron Hicks from 2018 in New York, who, you know, was kind of a fringe all-star candidate. Yeah, you know, that at his best, that's what kind of player he was.
He was a guy worth paying. The Yankees paid him.
They paid him, and they regretted it big time over the last couple of years. And they're still paying him, mind you. Let's keep that in mind as well. But in the case of him or Ryan O'Hearn, I mean, you have guys that have stepped up. Look, is Aaron Hicks going to be on this team in September? I have no idea. I'll say this much, with Mullins having returned over the weekend, Aaron Hicks is staying in my lineup either in right field or as the DH until he plays his way out of the lineup. And Ryan O'Hearn at first base, the same thing, as Mountcastle's coming back from the vertigo and on a rehab assignment in Norfolk. So you have that. So that those are short-term options for you. Maybe they play their way into being a long-term option. You know, I'm not the only one who's seen some comparisons with Ryan O'Hearn kind of doing a 2014 Steve Pearce impression, a guy that's come out of nowhere and been one of your best players for the last 3-4 weeks at the very least. So you have some of that, but I think, you know, and this we'll get to Jordan Westberg in more detail, but it's an example of where I look at this club and say, as good as they've been, where you look at a team that, you know, is, you know, they come out of the Seattle series, that 18 games over 500, they've kind of been hovering in that territory. You know, we'll see how the rest of this homestand plays out. But
and a good Reds team coming in here, like it's a different kind of series than we thought.
Oh, and Ellie De La Cruz being the toast of all of baseball right now. I mean, just an electric young player. But you look at this team and you kind of say, okay, they've been really good. You know, the sum of the parts has been excellent, right? I mean, you're talking about a team that's approaching 20 games over 500. But you look at it position by position, you look at it player by player on the roster, and you say, okay, there are still some areas where they can get better. And in the case of Westberg, you were talking about, well, Adam Frazier's had a really poor June. Jorge Mateo has been, let's face it, let's not sugarcoat it, he's been a disaster at the plate since April. I mean, he's had a sub 200 on base percentage. He's hit like a pitcher since the beginning of May. And I don't mean that to be disparaging. The numbers are the numbers for him. So when you
well, he's a guy right now. I'm betting maybe not. You know, of all the guys back in April that I loved and said, hey, that's, you know, they're off to this great start. There are a couple of these, the lineup is going to change. I mean, Westberg, I mean, they're not bringing guys up to have them pine out. I mean, I think they're bringing guys up to play them.
Right. And it's just going to be a matter of where they play. Now, I'll say this much. Let's be very clear about this. I am not looking to jettison Jorge Mateo from my roster, but him being an everyday player at this point in time, you're looking at it and saying, you can't have two sub 300 on base percentage guys in the middle of your infield playing every day. You know, if it's one or the other and you're kind of rotating, and Westberg can play third, he can play short, he's played second, he's even played some corner outfield. Gunnar Henderson can play shortstop. We know Ramon Urias can move around the infield. So
it's like a 3-4 defense here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Ravens talk about in their secondary positionless defense where you just have five or six members of your secondary who can kind of line up wherever. The Orioles, you know, from an infield standpoint, you know, you have some of that going. But the point I'm trying to make, though, is, and I've, one of my big pet peeves when I've heard people talk about this is not to complain about where the Orioles are right now, just in a big picture sense, or where they are record wise, or where they stand second place chasing Tampa Bay. It's how can you still try to get better? You know, because you look at all these individuals and you say, okay, certain guys having great seasons, and we've talked about Austin Hayes, and you've mentioned Mullins and Adley Rutschman, you know, being a, you know, an all-star, and all the different, you know, Felix Bautista on the bullpen side, Yennier Cano being such a massive story, but where can you get better? You know, don't be satisfied with where you are, especially when you have internal options. You know, you do all of this, you know, all this heralding of their farm system and being number one and all of that. Well, use it. If you have a position or two where you can stand to upgrade, and you have someone sitting at AAA like Westberg who was there for over a calendar year, by all means, find a way to get him up here and get him at bats and get him playing. And just because you succeed at AAA does not mean it's going to happen automatically in the majors, but what more can someone like him do? And we're going to be saying the same thing about Colton Cowser in the coming weeks, you know, and trying to figure that out. Aaron Hicks has probably complicated Colton Cowser's arrival in Baltimore because, you know, you don't want to get rid of someone who's been really productive for you. You know, so we'll see how that plays out. But the point is, and this goes back to what you were saying, come August and September, there could be a couple, you know, Westberg has arrived. Colton Cowser, you would expect, barring an injury situation, will be here at some point later this summer because he's produced at that high of a level. And you're talking about a former first round pick. You have Grayson Rodriguez on the pitching side. You know, we'll see what happens with DL Hall later in the year. So, you know, you
Means,
have
don't
other
forget
options.
Means. I never forget
John Means. Absolutely. You can't count on it, but he's still on a track that he should have a chance to contribute for them. It might be out of the bullpen for John Means come August and September, but you at least have that possibility. And that's not even to say anything about the trade deadline and the possibilities there. So to your point, this isn't a team that's going to look exactly the same as it does right now. And that's a good thing. You want to have options. You want to have more upside. You know, is this a team that I view right now and say, They're a favorite to get out of the American League and go to the World Series? Probably not, you know, considering where they are experience-wise. At the same time, you don't want to be dismissive of that chance. So if you can do some things to not compromise you from a long-term standpoint with your farm system and flexibility and different talent in the pipeline, but by all means, if the right deal presents itself via trade, if the right player is sitting there that can upgrade your middle infield, or you shuffle some pieces at the major league level to upgrade your middle infield, do it. You know, we've talked a lot about middle relief. I mean, as great as Bautista and Cano have been, can you add another reliever to kind of slot in as maybe your third best guy? You know, I thought it was interesting on Sunday. not to change the subject too much, but Brandon Hyde went to Danny Coulomb in the eighth inning. And I had to look because every time you see Batista, Cano pitches in the same game, right? I mean, think about it. I actually went back and looked at that. Sunday was the first time that we only saw one of those guys pitching in a game, where it's one or the other. You have to go back to June 4th. I mean, it's been a 3.5 weeks where if one pitches, the other guy's pitching in that same game. So for them to, for Hyde to turn to Danny Coulomb in the eighth inning and he does a really good job, to me, that's a good sign because
well, Cano hasn't blown a game to not have Batista come in, right?
Right,
I mean, it's been sort of like that too.
It has been, but at the same time, if you look at Cano, and look, this isn't, he was never going to stay where he was his first month where he was immortal. I mean, untouchable. He's allowed more base runners. He's looked a little more, human. He hasn't been bad, but he has allowed some base runners. So the point is, if you have a spot and it was the bottom of the Seattle order. I get that. It was a couple left-handed hitters that were due up, although they did pinch hit, but Coulomb's done a nice job against right-handed hitters as well. So you need some other relievers to emerge, whether it's him, whether it's Mike Bauman, who did a great job on Saturday in extra innings and ended up getting the win. So,
by the way, the rule changes are still affecting people. Like my wife and I are watching the game, and Coulomb comes in, and we're like, "Well, he's got to go pretty much the inning, right? I mean, you got to go three."
Right.
And
right.
So, when you see anything that looks matchup oriented, that's not baseball anymore. I mean, it's like they've taken that part of the strategy of lefty, lefty, righty, righty, two guys coming in. Who's going to pinch hit? Well, nobody has pinch hitters. I mean, people only have two or three pinch hitters to begin with, not like the National League where they always had pitchers batting and they were subbing out and doing stuff. It's sort of like, well, there used to be matchup. And I bet in the playoffs, there will be. In the playoffs, you might see somebody come off a bench or somebody use up their bench or whatever. But in the regular season now, where it is with the rules, once you commit to Coulomb, you're committed. It's not like, well, he gives up a single, he gives up a double. Well, he's still going to pitch a bit, right? So there is part of that when you bring a reliever in, it's a different commitment than it used to be for a manager for a team.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and there's still a little bit of that with two outs in an inning. Keep in mind, it's three batters, in the midst of an inning. But if you bring in Coulomb with two outs and he gets the final out, then you can go to a new pitcher for the following inning. So right. You still have a little bit of that, but yeah, we've seen it. The so-called loogie, right? The left-handed one out guy Brian Mattis was that for the Orioles during the Buck era. You don't see that as much because you need guys who can defend themselves against right-handed pitching or against right-handed hitting. And Coulomb's done that. So I was encouraged to see that. I was encouraged to see in the seventh inning when Bradish issues the two out walk. I mean, you're talking about it being a 3-2 game. I was looking for Brandon Hyde to walk out of the dugout. I was waiting to see him pop out of the dugout and make the pitching change. And he didn't. And Bradish, was up over 100 pitches at that point, and he got the third out of the inning. And that was good to see. So, a couple signs in Sunday's win beyond just getting the victory, where you saw some confidence late in the game that the manager shows in, one, your starting pitcher, two, in someone in a spot that suggested Yennier Cano, and Cano was available. He was warming up even.
And the game very much on the line.
Yeah, it was 3-2,
a
three-run
lead.
Right.
Yeah, it was a one-run game, right?
Exactly, and like I said, we've seen this formula where it's just been, Cano and then Batista, Batista, Cano before him. I mean, that's just the way it's been. So to have a game where both are available, but you only used one, it speaks to how well Bradish pitched on Sunday. He goes seven innings, but two, it was nice to see Coulomb step up in that spot because it can't just be Cano and Batista all year. And we've seen them have some issues with their middle relief. I certainly think that's an area where they could target at the trade deadline, that you're not necessarily going to have to give up your best prospects, but you can give up something to go get another impact arm for your bullpen, which I think would be huge for them. So we'll see how that plays out. But I think to go back to your question, what's going to happen? I mean, Mullins is back now. So as I said, think you see Hicks in right field a little more, although Santander reminded everyone he can flash a little bit of leather, although certainly not your best outfielder out in right field. But you have Hicks out there, you can DH Santander more. We're going to see what happens with first base. I think that's going to be fascinating. I mean, O'Hearn has played so well. We've talked about it. Mountcastle, even before the vertigo issue, not having a great year. You look at someone who has a sub 270 on base percentage. That not going to fly, you know, for an everyday player. So we've talked about Mateo's struggles. We've talked about the fact that Adam Frazier has really cooled off and gone in the wrong direction in June overall. So,
and you'd like to see Mullins play well now that he's back too, right?
Well, of course, right.
Right. Well, I mean, just once guys get back, it's not about it, it's about when's Rutschman really going to hit the ball. Henderson had his 2 weeks where he was on fire. It's who catches fire next. And I mean, Hicks has been a great player since they brought him up, a very serviceable player, but it really is about these runs that they're on right now. Who's going to carry the team? Henderson carried the team for a week and a half.
He absolutely did. And I mean, we talked about the fact that he was hitting 170 earlier in the year, and people were clamoring to send him back to the minors. And I kept saying, wait, just be patient. He's 21. He still has a 330 on base percentage. I mean, he's finding ways to contribute, even though he's not swinging the bat as consistently as you'd like. And lo and behold, he's had a fantastic June. So, and look, let's be clear about this. Not so much talking about someone like Henderson, who is so highly regarded and figures to be a core piece for this team for a long time. You know, but guys like O'Hearn and Hicks, they've been a great story in June. That doesn't mean they'll be a great story come August and September, but you have enough players and pieces in the minor leagues. You have resources to make deals at the deadline. This team could look pretty different come August and September. And that's a good thing, mind you. You know, you want to have options because you know not everyone's going to play great the rest of the way. You know not everyone's going to stay healthy the rest of the way. Inevitably, you'll have someone else that's going to go down and tweak a hamstring for a couple weeks and be on the shelf. So you want to have options. And that's where the Orioles, with their farm system, you know, we'll see on the trade front, we'll see on the payroll front in terms of taking on salary. Those are questions that some skepticism's warranted until they prove otherwise, but they certainly have the resources within their system to dip down to the minors and say, hey, we're having some issues with our middle infield. We'll bring up a Jordan Westberg. If we need some more outfield production, Colton Cowser's had a great year at AAA. So, you know, Grayson Rodriguez will be back at some point in time. You know, we'll see about some other arms in the minor leagues. So you want those options because, you know, as we've seen, anyone who watches baseball has watched baseball long enough, your 26-man roster is not going to be the same in April as it is, you know, come September. And in the case of the Orioles, that potential is there where I look at bringing up a Westberg. I look at bringing up a Cowser. Gunnar Henderson, obviously, late last year. You want that upside, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that they haven't been good. They've been really good. But how can you get better over the course of the season? And that's what's exciting when you have a farm system like this, that you can tap into that and upgrade. So, you know, fun to get a series win, an important series win for them on the heels of an ugly Friday. They were able to put that behind them very quickly for the rest of the series. And now we'll see what Jordan Westberg looks like. And then we'll see what this looks like the rest of the homestand with specifically Ellie De La Cruz and the Reds coming in. And boy, he's been a fantastic story. So looking forward to watching him play this week.
Well, even my wife knows about him and the Marlins kid hitting 400. I mean, mm-hmm. There's some stories beyond just the Orioles playing well, but the Reds as an organization, as a franchise for their city and what the Bengals have done recently with the Reds, what the Bengals never did for 50 years and what the Reds haven't done in 40 years at this point in being really competitive and winning. And I want to ask you, this is off the field. This has nothing to do with Westberg or even the lineup or whatever, but I'm starting to watch it now that they're home a little bit. They were in Tampa and I had an unbelievable conversation with Rick Vaughn. I ran it a little bit last week. It'll run a little bit this week. If you haven't checked it out, please go to Baltimore Positive and check it out. Just about this resuscitation of the franchise, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about the Ravens and, you know, all of their buy individual game tickets and the empty purple seats and whatever. The Ravens still own the city in that way, for sure, as we learned with the Lamarathon over the offseason. But with the Orioles, we've been waiting for them to win. They're winning. They're real. They're not a might be like they were this time last year or they're coming. They're here. Mm-hmm. And I watch every night I look at the crowd. I haven't been to the games. I watch them on Masson. I watch the way they're shot. I watch the way they put cute kids on eating ice cream and they try to feature a sprinkling of color at the ballpark that may or may not be reality for being out there. And then there's just a weird sitting where like there's all these empty seats in various places to gauge like How many people are really there? You're there most nights, almost every night. Your expectations and mine are different, right? Because I, in 1992, 93, I saw what the franchise could be, what it was. It's not that anymore. Washington, all of that. But what is a successful Orioles franchise going to look like on a Friday night, on a Sunday afternoon, on a day when they're not given bobbleheads away, on a weeknight in summer where the sensation of the sport is playing? And I don't mean Shohei Ohtani. He already came last month. But I mean, when there's – I mean, the Reds bring some color here this week. It's the middle of the week. Kids are out of school. People are at the beach. Ticket prices are what they are. The weather's good enough. How do you feel about the crowds? Or do you think is it what you expected? And I would say your bar might be a little lower than mine, just in a level of, hey, what's this going to look like when they're successful one day? Well, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, are the crowds, they're better. They're certainly better. And I'll say this, and look, this is much more anecdotal. This is much more of just my observation and my experience just sitting in the press box, which is open air. I would even say just the enthusiasm alone for the people who are there on any given night. And, you know, on Saturday they had 32,000, you know, they had 19,000 on Sunday. And it's Seattle. And I know the Mariners.
Sunday felt a little weak for me. I put the TV on. I'm like,
yeah,
it doesn't feel like a healthy franchise when on a Sunday afternoon the Mariners are in. It doesn't feel like, it feels like there should be more people wanting to go out there than have been in my mind. But then I'm one of them and I'm like, well, why don't I go? Well, it costs money. I went to see The Cure. I did other things with my, like, being there for me is not indicative of my level of interest. I know who they play, when they play, when their pitcher is on. I just don't like giving them money. I don't like getting in the car and going down there. It doesn't feel all that joyous to me, given the family and 30 years of doing it for me. But I watch them on TV every night. And all they do, seemingly, the television show now, with Rob, from Rob Long on, is one big shill to get me to the ballpark and to show how great the ballpark is. We got to get you I mean, it really is a sell job. You're at the game. You're not watching it. I'm home watching them 8 miles away try to get me to come give them money. And it feels like the television broadcast, more than anything, every part of it, it's more like the wrestling matches in the day where Vince was trying to get you down there to see Ivan Putski wrestle. The whole idea of the television show was to get you to buy a ticket. That was what championship wrestling was for 30 years. It's different now. It's a whole different thing with McMahon. But with the Orioles, it feels like it's come to that. It feels like it's come that if you have us on TV, by God, you got to come pay us and come see us because, like, we need people here. And it's very evident when you put the games on, like, they could have more people at the games. I mean, especially Sunday, I was a little like, yeah, that, you know, but they have to work at it. And in every single way, they have to work at getting people, getting me to the game, getting somebody who has a credit card, who has money, who loves baseball, whose last name's Aparicio, getting me to come and say, I want to see this kid from the Reds play, or I want to see Jordan Westbrook, whatever it is. I need, there has to be, get a bobblehead or give me an excuse to go. I'm a little disappointed there aren't more people there, but I know who runs it. And I don't think they're very good at doing this. I mean, I really don't. I mean, they have a great team. I don't think they're really good at driving the bus for getting people there other than begging people on Masson every day, which is that's their marketing arm. Their marketing arm is, I tripped across the game. Come to the game on Tuesday night. Come see Shaquille O'Neal. Like, all of these things, these offers that they make, I saw Sunday's crowd and I'm like, that's not good. You know, it's a Sunday game in the middle of a pennant race in the summer. I want to see more people there, and I hope that in August there are.
Yeah, well, a couple things here. First of all, games being shown on TV, that's always been. Now, how over the top you might be about it, but think about it. 40, 50 years ago, they didn't show home games on TV. They showed games on the road. Home games weren't shown on TV. Why? Because they wanted you to come out to the ballpark. So there's always been that element. The difference now is we're talking about in the case of the Orioles, where the Angelos family owns Masson, and you know, you can kind of make it a little more, you know, not even a little bit more. It's not objective. So you have that part. What I will say,
it's not objective, especially when they hire Jason Lockenfour and put him. I mean, you know, John's doing his best to own the market. He made nice with me, but he's trying to pay everybody else. And when you get them on the payroll, then they sit at 105.7 all afternoon, and they cannot criticize the team. So there is a point where That's the old Orioles to me. The old Orioles were like, how dare you criticize them? They're family. Right. Nobody can criticize the Orioles. Somebody better be criticizing them, and it better be I will never work for them. I would live in a trailer park before I took John's money to eunuch what we can or cannot say about the baseball team on any given day. But they're trying in that way. Like, I'm telling you, I sit here and watch the television broadcast, and they don't smack of desperation, but it's an infomercial. I mean, and it always was, but it was never. It was, hey, let's watch the game. Now it's, hey, don't you want to come to the game? Really, we'll get you to the game. Come on down to the game. There's plenty of room at the game. There's a lot more of that in the broadcast because it screams that there's room, and it screams that, hey, we're really good, and it screams that, hey, tickets are $20. Come on down. Now how many people are going to come? And I'd like to see, in general, this is a series where if my dad were alive, my dad would want to see this kid play.
Yeah, right,
We would wind up out there because there's a reason to come other than a bobblehead. That's all. Who's pitching? Westberg. I mean, there's going to – Kowser's coming. There's going to be reasons. Still haven't seen Rodriguez pitch when he comes back, right? So there's reasons to go to the ballpark now. There really are every night.
There are. But the thing I'll say, though, is it's not a light switch. It's a dial. I mean, let's face it. We're going to use a very simple, and I know you love food, and you love going to and trying new places, new restaurants.
First of all, peach cake. Get me started. It's peach cake season.
The Orioles for a long time, but we can go back longer than the last 5 years. But let's just use the last 5 years because that's a more apt comparison. The Orioles were a restaurant that served awful food for 5 years. You know, specifically the last 5 years in particular, awful, right? Just because a restaurant then suddenly starts serving amazing food, is it going to be full the first night, the first week, the first month, the first 2 months that they start serving great food? No.
Word's got to get out that the food's better. There's a new
chef. Exactly. And that's what it is. And look, the Orioles are better. And look, I'd love to see the ballpark full every night. Do I think it's ever going to go back to that where it was in 1997? And I'm not suggesting that you're expecting that either. You know, I don't think you're going to ever see to that degree. However, people who do go, they have a good time. They see a more, and this is where I talked about the crowd just being more enthusiastic in general. Even some games where they've lost and they've lost big, I've been surprised how into it the crowd has been compared to being out there when, you know, there's maybe 5,000 people literally in the ballpark and no one's interested and everyone's looking to leave in the seventh inning. So you have some of that and you continue to win. And yeah, you know what they're doing on Masson by trying to get people out to the ballpark. Shame on them if they're not trying to do those things because we talked about this back in 2019. Where were the ticket deals? What were you trying to do to get people out to the ballpark? Understanding you're not trying to win at the major league level, but you're still running a business at the end of the day. So they're doing that and you know, continue to do bobbleheads, do ticket deals. You know, you have the splash zone right next to the bullpen that's been a hit. I mean, even that section, the bleachers where they have the deal, I think it's $10 Monday through Thursday, home games. Those are pretty full most nights, you know, even if it's not a great night overall attendance.
Well, the fact that you can go out there for $10, that's what it's worth.
That's good.
That's right. Like $10 might get me and my wife out there to see the Reds this week. Like yeah. I might give them $20. I would consider doing that.
Right. So, but my point is you're not going to get everyone to come back overnight because hey, some of what you laid out as far as your reasons, and obviously you're a unique case to the average Orioles fan.
And they've treated me worse than everybody else. They've just treated of you like garbage. They've treated me like trash. So, you know, I'm just talking about give us money to come see awful baseball was their premise for everybody. That wasn't their premise for Nestor. It was, we'll lock you out because you're a jerk and you might report the truth on us, so we'll lock you out. That's a whole different level of character and integrity. But that being said, when the food's good, doesn't matter who's serving it. The food's good right now. The food's very good right now. And I'm their biggest critic, and I'll say their food's good. And everybody should recognize it for what it is. And then I see 19,000 people on Sunday and say, maybe they need some $10 tickets on Sunday too. That's all I'm thinking.
No question about it. Or, you know, some more, you know, I have a friend who has a small, you know, modest season ticket package this year. One thing that he's able to do, it's very flexible. You know, it's almost like you have a certain amount dollar amount and you can kind of distribute that however you want to. It's not like the days of, well, you have a game on April 13th, you have a game on May 20th, you have tickets for June 13th, and you have tickets for July 2nd. You know, it's not like that anymore. So there is more flexibility in that way, but that's what people want in the modern day. I mean, we've talked about this a lot with PSLs and being a season ticket holder for the Ravens. Do people want to be locked into every single home game, or do you want a case where you can go to three or four home games and you try to sell the rest, or you just don't have tickets for the rest? So, but my point is, you know, I mentioned it, it's a dial more so than a light switch, you know, as far as fans coming back. And some of the reasons you laid out, let's keep in mind, you still have the Angelos family. You still have perception, whether it's right or wrong. People are going to feel a certain way about coming downtown until their mind has changed, and you hope.
Well, I was with a friend from out of town. I ran into a friend over the weekend. I was in New York seeing the alarm, and he's like, I was in Baltimore recently, and I didn't feel safe. And he's not being mean. He's not, right. You know, he's not a Republican or a Trumpy or a guy who lives in. He's a guy who runs around New York City. And he's like, yeah, I was in Baltimore, and I didn't like the way it made me feel. You know, he had dinner in the city, and I said, that's terrible that that's the way you felt, because like that, I go into the city 3-4 days a week, but there is a, if you had an experience, squeegee boy, something happened in the city, you know, I don't know, maybe you'll come back for Springsteen, but you're not thinking about the Orioles on a Tuesday night somehow, and the game's on TV, and you're like, it's easy, it's cheaper, I'm home, I gave my money to The Cure on Sunday night, or to Shania Twain, or Dave Matthews, or whatever. That is one thing, as a lazy-ass 55-year-old old man that I am at this point, that the game is here. I don't need to go to the game this week to see this kid play for the Reds, and my wife can grill out, and we can bring a shish kebab in from Wise Markets and sit here and watch the game on television. They have made that part of it too easy for an old guy like me to give him 10 bucks and get in the car when it's not there, and I will bitch to the high hosannas when the game's not on Apple Plus or on Peacock, which I have done. But that being said, if they say to me, your only option to see the game is to come give us money, that would be a 1980s level of arrogance that none of us would accept, right? We didn't accept it the last couple of weeks when they've banged a Friday night game or a Sunday game on us. But there is a point where when you pay for it, you have it on television, you kind of have it. You have it. You don't miss a game by not going to the game. And then you say to yourself, well, if I go there, it's like, should I listen to The Cure on CD, or should I go sit on the hill and pay 16 bucks for a beer to do it, which would bring me more joy? Baseball's easy from home. And that's part of what they're up against. I mean, sure. It's too easy on a 90-degree night to just put it on if you know you have it.
Right. That's part of it. I mentioned the perception of coming downtown, whether it's right or wrong. If someone's going to feel that way, you're not going to intimidate them into or guilt them into coming back. You have to provide more incentive if you're the club, you know, with more giveaways, more ticket deals, you know, all those types of things. And
where am I parking? Where am I parking? We're gonna need, I'm being an old white guy. Where am I parking? Where am I parking? That's the most important thing to a lot of people.
It's part of it. It absolutely is. You still have a lease situation that's unresolved.
I did that last week. I'm not doing that this week.
But that's part of it, right? And what, so all of what
it's offensive. It's offensive. The Angelos family is highly offensive to me, and it should be offensive to almost everybody in the community. So they're trying to sell against that for a lot of people.
Right. So you have these obstacles in the way of fully embracing the team on the field right now. And you mentioned TV. TV is a big part of it. Look, say what you want about other elements of the telecast. I thoroughly enjoy hearing Kevin Brown do games with Jim Palmer or Ben McDonald. I mean, I do. I think the broadcast, in-game play-by-play, in-game broadcast is good. I enjoy hearing them do the game. So that element, yeah, the TV element's part of it. In the same way that every sport is dealing with that, right? We've talked about the NFL, how good of a product it is on television, and you're not dealing with beer lines and being, you know, paying $50 for parking and all the different things. So, look, these aren't excuses. These are all variables that explain why you're not selling out the ballpark every single night in the way that you did in 1997. And, oh, yeah, there's a team right down the road that wasn't there in 1997 as well. We've documented that, and we'll continue to talk about that to varying degrees. But my overall point is attendance is better. Can it get better? Should it get better? Does it need to continue to get better? Absolutely. But it's a dial. We're still only talking about being – this was a year ago at this time is when they went on their winning streak where, hey, this team's not so bad. It was a year ago at this time that they really started turning it on. And then we saw them look like they did in the second half of last season, and they've carried that over. So you continue to win, coupled with continuing to make the efforts that they need to make in terms of deals, promotions, different things of that nature, people will continue to come back. Now, I can't sit here, Nestor, and say I know what that ceiling looks like in terms of attendance for a full season, but it's gotten better. It needs to continue to get better. But again, it was always going to take time when you're talking about just how lousy the food was over the last 5 years specifically.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him, Luke, at WNST. They can find him probably sitting in the press box this week. The Ravens are out. Luke is in. And if you're looking at Max Pizza and Wildwood some point in the next 10 days, you'll probably find Luke there. Are you pepperoni or straight cheese? How do you go down there?
At Max, it's straight cheese.
All right. Well, straight I was in New York over the weekend, and I had 5 slices of pizza. My wife was appalled, but none of them had anything but cheese and tomatoes on them. So I went margarita. I went non-meat this week because I'm going to be eating crab cakes all week. On Thursday, we're going to be at Fadley's doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some scratch-offs. We did have some lucky winners at Spirits West last week. We were over in Wilkins Avenue with Rick Kehoe, and we had Chad Wiesling, and had an unbelievable conversation with Chris Pike as well. Chris came over. It's his side of town with Mount St. Joe. So some great, great stuff on the air. Luke and I are going to abstain from all things football this week, and unless the Ravens make us talk about it and focus on the Cincinnati Reds this week as the Orioles play some home baseball here. And Luke will be doing some getaway. We're doing some Heritage Fair this week. Shout out to Wise Markets and our friends in Dundalk. I'll be down there for Crack the Sky on Sunday night. So if you see a guy with long hair in the beer garden, yep, that's me. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.